Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007 Board of Aldermen meeting. I apologize that we're starting a little bit late. We had to finish up the tail end of our last meeting as an executive session in private. But we are here now and getting started. Alex Zaffron had some work obligations and cannot be with us. I'd like to begin the meeting by asking whether there are any requests from visitors or speakers from the floor who want to address us on matters that are not on our printed agenda. Seeing none. Randy? Oh. Okay, go ahead.
October is again Breast Cancer Month, and I like everybody and encourage everyone to encourage your partners, wives, girlfriends, sisters to regularly get a mammogram. Early detection saves lives. It saved my life. And so I just would encourage everybody to do that. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you. All right. This past Friday, I signed a proclamation in conjunction with the mayor of Chapel Hill and the Owassa Board of directors declaring a stage one water shortage, which is going to involve, I would first of all encourage people to visit the Owassa website, owassa.org, and on the left-hand side of the screen, the second tab down, is all about conservation efforts and things that you can do to reduce the amount of water that your household is consuming. I encourage everybody to take a look at that and try to implement some of the procedures. Alderman Randy Haven O'Donnell has been working on this issue some, and I'll turn toward her.
Well, I just wanted to I wanted to thank Mark for putting forth the proclamation on Friday, and I drafted a resolution calling upon the citizens of Carrboro to protect our water supplies and adhere to the Stage 1 Water Shortage Proclamation. And do you want me to read the resolution? Is that in order?
You know, you might not feel the need to read every whereas clause in it.
Well, one of the things that's most important here is that presently the forecast from climatologists in Raleigh is that we're going to have a dry winter, and based on that and historical conditions with La Nina, which we're in a La Nina phase at this point, you know, it's really important that we look to conserve beyond the year-round conservation measures that have been in place. So, you know, I call upon the citizens of Carrboro to make sound decisions about water use and strictly adhere to the Owassa Stage 1 water restrictions in addition to the year-round conservation standards. I'd like the board to urge Carrboro citizens to restrict their water use well below the 1,000 gallons per day, which is 30,000 gallons a month, and use this cap until the water supply restrictions are lifted. And that the town enforce the penalties for violation of the provisions of the Stage 1 water shortage as set forth in the town code. And I brought, I've got two other things. One, I brought my water bill from September. And, you know, so I average about between 5,000 and 6,000 gallons a month. And I know that I can do better. So I make the challenge to the rest of Carrboro. I have two other suggestions that I'd like to make in addition to the resolution. Can make them right now. So one of the things that I'd like to do is have the community take a not one drop more than needed pledge. And I urge all residents to look at their most recent bill, as I have done, and pledge to reduce their consumption by at least 10% or more. And second, I'd like to find some way to have folks involved in creating a water meter for themselves at home so that they can gauge their use. I encourage families to be involved and look at looking at their water usage and taking up the challenge on the home front, getting the whole family involved. And I think that finally, to ask OWASA to redouble efforts in terms of educational awareness, maybe with the next water bill, sending a postcard or some little cheat sheet that has some of the wonderful things that are listed on the website.
Jackie?
I think Randy's resolution's great. However, I'm disappointed in OWASA for not going further, and I'd like to ask Mark and Kevin to revisit your resolutions from Friday. 1,000 gallons a day, that's 30,000 gallons a month. You know, what are they doing, washing elephants and semis? You know, most of that is going towards grass. It's going towards lawns. And how can you be spending 30,000 gallons a month when you're only allowed to water one day? I mean, this doesn't make sense to me. And I'd like, you know, OWASA's representatives represent us. And I'd like to ask our OWASA representative to please go to the OWASA board with the message that no, 1,000 gallons a day, when we're looking at long-term drought, doesn't cut it, that we'd like to see that cut in half, if not more. Randy doesn't live alone. Her mom lives with her. Her husband lives with her. Your son's home right now.
He's home enough.
Yeah, home enough to like do laundry. take showers, and
they bring their laundry home from college.
Yeah. So you know that we're talking about something that's six times more than what it's ridiculous. I think it's giving people permission to be water gluttons. So I'd like to add to this that we ask OWASA to reduce that maximum to, you know, I think 500 gallons a day is gracious plenty, and that we ask Chapel Hill to do the same. And I know that there's some reluctance on the part of some members of OWASA to have really strict enforcement for when it comes to lawns. I'm looking forward to having on our agenda ways for us to encourage low water use in new developments, for us to get that on in our ordinance. Okay.
Joel.
You know, I think one thing that we can do and we could think about doing is that maybe we should give some recognition to either the residents or the business that reduces the most water use during this drought. Because I think it's important to acknowledge people that work hard, that do that. And so I would ask the board to consider that as well. I think that, you know, as I've said before, water's for drinking, washing your clothes, and cooking. And I think we really need to be careful because we're in an extreme drought. And only at this point will we get to where we need, unfortunately, maybe a hurricane, and we don't want that to happen. So I think we really need to be proactive, and I agree with both Jackie and Randy about maybe lowering the amount of water that's allowed. Because, you know, we come into a situation that was back in the early 70s where there was no water, and we need to be very proactive about it. And when I was on the board, we recognized that smaller houses use less water, and so I would encourage the board, you know, long-term to think about, you know, at a certain point, that's a discussion we need to have.
Yeah, at what point do we not have development because we don't have water for it?
Or smaller development.
Dan and then John.
Okay. I agree with everything that's been said. And so if we do move Randy's resolution, which I expect we will, with additional items attached. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and move Randy's resolution, and I'm going to change Section 2 to have, instead of, say, below 1,000 gallons per day, to say 500, mm-hmm. number Jackie suggested, mm-hmm. and add a Section 4 that Mayor Chilton will contact our OASA representatives and tell them that it is this board's intention that this stage one limit be reduced to that amount, and that we'd like them to take that to the OASA board. And Mark doesn't have enough to do yet, so that, and a section five, that Mayor Chilton will contact Mayor Foy to ask him to take up this concept with the Chapel Hill Town Council in regards to their interests. And I would also like to add a section six, which is that sometime in the next few months, while we're still experiencing this drought, that we revisit the long-term water growth projection chart that, if I'm recalling correctly, it was about 18 months ago that OASA folks came in and we all looked at that. And I think we might look at that differently today, and it might affect how we think about our anticipated growth in light of what it's like to be under a drought and experiencing those issues. So anyway, so that's my motion with...
Can I add a friendly amendment?
Yes.
A section 7 to the business and or residents, if they want the recognition, that reduces the amount of water use the most. Because I think that's something, if somebody says, look, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I think, you know, that's if they want to be recognized. Not necessarily, they may not want to be recognized. So.
Just a question about that last item. I assume you're talking about a Carborough business.
Right, I'm talking about a Carborough business.
Well, the problem with that is OASA doesn't keep records based on jurisdictional boundaries, so I don't know how we know.
So you'll if you think you've done well, here's how you can prove it. Is bring us your October bill and your September bill and show us how much you've improved.
We'd be glad to have Joel at Harris Teeter.
Yeah, exactly. Saturday afternoons at Harris Teeter, Joel will be shopping. And
Find out by the Cheetos.
yeah, well, we eat a lot of them.
So I accept that as a friendly amendment. Okay. Complete with all the explanation.
All right. So it's been moved, and I take that as a second for the matter. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The matter passes unanimously.
I just want to make a quick observation on part of the point that Joel was making about water usage for by business. I know we love cars, and some people even worship them. And car washes are the major waste of water in our communities. And even if it is well water, they're depleting the water table, and in fact, all of us. So I understand, I would love to do some research. I understand some places in Florida, they have refuse water in car washes. Mm. So is there ways to reuse that water, which will encourage that, or maybe, you know, anybody else going to rebuild a car wash, which requests that, that'll be part of,
great
of any future improvement, you know, so that we can reuse better the water on car washes.
That's an interesting idea.
Food for thought.
Steve, I was wondering, is there some way to show the standard, yeah, the conservation standards, so that the audience at home can see? It's just a superior list of conservation recommendations that OASA has on their website, and it's accessed through the OASA website and OASA.org and the Carborough website, Town of Carborough website.
Are there any of those that
the top one? Top one.
One,
yeah. So for folks at home, if you go to this website, and if you would, can you scroll it down a little bit? Because it really is excellent. And if you're taking up my challenge, here's some great things that you can do. And you can start small, but you surely notice the difference. Thank you.
Okay, and I have just two things to add to this. One is I would like the town staff to look at whether there is a convenient way to highlight this whole issue on the homepage of the Town of Carborough website, some kind of just notice pointing out the water shortage to people and maybe linking over to the OWASA conservation section of the OWASA website.
We do have a link. It's to do it on the front page is more complicated than it might appear. We spent a long time developing that front page, but there is a direct link to the proclamation that, that you authorized on Friday. If you click on the message board, which is on the front page, and then the OWASA link involves two clicks. It's click community, then click links, and then there's a link to the OWASA homepage.
Okay. And we could also put the link to the resolution. I think it would be worth some way to kind of increase the prominence of it, but I'd leave that to people who know a lot more about the Internet than me.
And can we have the link? It doesn't have to be the front page, but sort of a link to the State Water Resource Department, because that's the information they have is interesting, and I think would put it in the contents of what the entire state is going through.
Right. It's actually, the problem is far worse in some nearby communities. And then the other thing is that I believe, and I sort of assume that the staff is probably already looking at this matter, but I believe that sometimes when we approve development applications, those development approvals involve requirements about planting plants and so forth. And I think as long as we're in stage one or worse water shortage, we should try to see whether there's a way we can be flexible about when those plants are planted, because basically the stage one requirements say that that there are no exceptions to the outdoor watering rule in favor of recently planted plants, and I don't want to, on the one hand, be requiring people to put plants in the ground, on the other hand, be denying them the opportunity to keep those plants alive. So I doubt if that's a huge issue, but if we could just ask the inspections department to figure out a way to make sure the plantings happen eventually, but not require them at a time when it makes no sense to be putting plants in the ground.
Regardless.
Okay. So, and then very briefly on, a week from this Friday, October 12th, there's going to be a reception at Carrboro Town Hall and at the Century Center from 6 to 9 p.m. For Emma's Kids Art Exhibit and Sale. Carver Arts Committee will be hosting this, and it will be a benefit for children living with AIDS in group home in South Africa. That'll be not this Friday, but a week from this Friday, 6 to 9 p.m., in both locations at Carborough Town Hall and the Century Center. Please come by, and a suggested donation is $25 to support the organization. And then the very next day, a week from this Saturday, we'll begin 2 days of the West End Poets Weekend. That'll be starting Saturday, October 13th at 11:30 a.m. at the Carborough Century Center. And the public is welcome and very much invited. All right, and now, at long last, still one more thing. Is Catherine Twing here? Catherine, please come up to the clerk's desk. Catherine was recently appointed to the Transportation Advisory Board, and she is here to take her charge as a Transportation Advisory Board member.
Bless you.
As a Transportation Advisory Board member, you will assist in the execution of studies, advise, and make recommendations to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen concerning all matters relating to the transportation within the town of Carrboro and the surrounding area, including but not limited to the need for the construction, operation, relocation, or improvement of streets, sidewalks, and bikeways, as well as the establishment and improvement of alternative methods of mass transportation. 2, report to the Board of Aldermen as requested by the Board and undertake such studies or perform such duties as the Board may request from time to time. And 3, take any other action authorized by the Board of Aldermen. I'd like to get you to sign that.
I would like to meet the board. Catherine, if you'd come over to.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay. With that, Mr. Manager, the consent agenda.
Okay. Item 1, approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of September 18th and 25th. Item 2 is a town code amendment dealing with the duties of and the quorum requirements for the Carrboro Arts Committee. Item 3 is a request to set a public hearing on an ordinance amending the Carrboro Land Use Ordinance to modify roadway buffer requirements. Item 4 is a resolution authorizing the sale of surplus town property. Item 5 is a resolution recommending an appointment to the Chapel Hill Orange County Visitors Bureau. Item 7 is a request to set a public hearing for Harmony Farms, also known as the Jones property, a voluntary annexation request. And item 7, additional appointments to the Carrboro Comprehensive Bicycle Plan Steering Committee.
Second.
Items C1 through 7 have been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1.
Okay. D1 is a request to consider reissuing the bond anticipation notes upon expiration in the amount of $2,590,000. The board is requested to consider reissuing these bond anticipation notes that are due to expire December 6th of this year and approve a staff recommendation to renew the amount of the bands issued at the current amount of $2,590,000 so that work on the sidewalk and Greenway bond projects may continue in a timely fashion. And George has a presentation.
Does anybody on the board have any questions about this situation?
Yes.
Okay.
Since we're getting ready to reissue it, I'd like us to revisit the inclusion of Barn Street in sidewalks that will be built relatively soon.
Mr. Manager, how would that notion fit in with what we're doing here?
That would be very. Please, George, if I misstate, I think that would be very difficult to do with this reissuance. We've got to bring back a resolution to you all on October the 16th to move forward with this. And these are projects that have already gone through an extensive review process.
Okay, then I'd like to ask that we put on the agenda as soon as possible sidewalks on Barn Street to figure out a way to do it. Okay, and then I will withdraw it from this particular conversation.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think it would be good for us to schedule some time to talk about that, and I think also about just sort of the larger picture of after these bond funds are gone, we're still going to have a sidewalk list, and how and when will we ever address some of the other projects on the list in general. As usual, an outstanding presentation, George. Is there a motion for the resolution?
Resolution. Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
I thought it was one of the more scintillating ones.
It's the tie that does it, I think. Mr. Manager, item C2.
George, this one was going to be the one time you don't have one.
appointments to the Greenways Commission.
Yes,
there is a half presentation.
The board created a Greenways Commission at its meeting on June 19, 2007. The purpose of this of tonight's agenda item is for the board to make the appointments to this commission. Staff request adoption of the attached resolution. I think you have a number of applications, but either in your packet or at your places. And Randy, this I think is really your item. The staff doesn't have a presentation.
Okay.
Well,
what do you want to do, Randy?
There are nine at large applications for, and I, my druthers is to accept all nine. And I know that Jackie and I have worked very hard on this. And the other item I want to bring up is that Jackie and I would both like to continue our work. So I would ask to, amend and accept all nine applications that came in on time, and that Jackie and I both have the opportunity to serve.
Well,
So the motion is to amend the composition to specify 9 at large.
Right.
There's an issue at the front table.
There's an ordinance issue.
Okay. Let's hear the ordinance issue.
What you have in your packet is from the ordinance that you all adopted establishing the position. So if you want to do something, I assume it can be done tonight, Mike, but you'd have to amend the ordinance in order to make the appointment.
So we could amend the ordinance tonight and add the additional spots so that the additional people can be added.
Is that right?
So I move we amend the ordinance to have 9 at-large members and 2 alder folk.
I guess my can I make a suggestion? Yeah. Why don't we say no fewer than 5 and no more than 9?
Okay.
So that way, in the future, we don't have to be scrambling to find 9.
Does that clarification help?
As is typical, it requires a little word jumbling around to accomplish it. So I would suggest maybe we just spell out what it is that you want to do, and then we can appoint those folks and get the ordinance sort of changed and drafted up the way you want it done, and just run it through a consent agenda item the next time.
We want to appoint.
I don't think you have to wait in the appointments particularly.
Okay.
Well, can I?
You can just have a few minutes to do it.
No,
it's going to take a couple minutes because there are specific terms that were worked out.
Let me ask a different question, just about whether we really want to do it just this way, which is, I just want to point out that I guess sometimes when you appoint a whole lot of people to these committees, it becomes becomes difficult to get a quorum of the group to appoint in the event that some of the people may not take the responsibility of being on the committee quite as seriously as other people. So I just I'm not sure how to address that, but it seems like there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and if we put 2 aldermen, 9, 10.
It's actually 9 because there's another one at our place, the Assembly Bank.
It's 9, but
No, but I'm not even counting the open, the sort of at large. I'm counting the other voting representatives. If we put 2 aldermen on there, is adds up to 10, and then the proposal is to add 9 more at-large members is 19. I don't know. I mean, it just becomes kind of unwieldy to have this unbelievably large committee. I'm not trying to keep anybody out of it.
But that's a big number for staff to deal with, too. Just food for thought. There are 13 members on the commission right now. I mean, the ordinance provides for a commission composed of 13 members.
Well, actually...
plus a third 14.
Gary Junker is, there's one less because Gary is representing the school district, so I counted him twice just for edification.
Okay, so we don't need, we can cross him off of the at-large list,
right? Right, exactly.
And then the person Sally Benedict.
Sally.
So that's Benedict. 7 people for 5 spots.
Right.
8 including Sally Benedict. I mean, I want any of these people who are interested in actually participating and actually showing up to be on the committee. But
could we appoint some people as alternates?
Yeah, we could. We have a couple of folks who are from the same areas, so that may be a way to create alternates.
We had alternates for the Carolina North process, so... There is some precedent.
Sure.
We have done it before.
Does the ordinance allow us to have alternates or prevent us from having
alternates? It could. There are none specified here.
And I guess, I'll just point out, part of what's going on here is we have 3 different people who live right along Morgan Creek, for example, who want to participate. But that is the very first, that's the very next Greenway project that's going to be built is right along Morgan Creek, and I think that's part of the interest. And it's not that they're, as far as I know, any of them are opposed to it. They just want to be involved, and that's a good thing. I don't necessarily know all the rest of these people, but Philip Ducastle, how you pronounce his name, he was one of the people that we declined to appoint to the Bicycle Planning Committee last week, for example.
So I read all, I know everyone had a chance to look at the applications. I came prepared with five names to put forward. I could do that to start a conversation.
Okay, who are those people?
Well, looking in terms of record and diversity of neighborhood, I came up with that record, meaning background. George Daniel, Michael Flynn, Monica Niece, Amber Wagner, and Sally Benedict. And I think we've got a variety of neighborhoods there, and I thought those were also the
five. No, I don't agree with that list, I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah, me either.
I'll give you my thought about it. One is that I think it would be good to, Mr. Newcastle seems particularly interested in being involved in something along these lines, and I think it would be good to include him, particularly since we decided not to do that last week. And in terms of the question of who will actually show up, there is no one that I have more confidence in his attendance than
Rob.
Let me say that. I had I had Bob, George Daniel, Michael Flynn, Duke Castle, and Amber Wagner.
Well, I know I am on my short list. I know that I had Sally on my list because Sally worked on the parks, the master plan for the Parks and Rec. She was instrumental with the Greenway Summit and the work that she's done. So
she was also on the Horace Williams.
Yes. So I'm very much committed to.
I did not see Sally.
No, hers is at our place.
She didn't.
Oh, it's another. Okay.
It's not on that list, on the pre-grant list, but her application is in. I'm sorry. Go ahead. And what were your other thoughts about it, Randy?
I'm concerned that we have enough geographic diversity. Johnny Randall is there from the Morgan Creek Alliance, so I know that they've got a strong voice, and we naturally rolled over several people from the Morgan Creek Alliance because they are that's the first piece that's going to be addressed, so I know that particular group is represented.
I'll give you my three, and the other two y'all can have.
Go ahead.
That would be Sally Benedict, Philip
Duke Castle,
and Bob Kirshner. And I think some of it is just geography, and for Mr. Duke Castle, when you have somebody that wants to be involved in town advisory board, and everybody does, and I guess for me, he gets an additional, if we're looking at it one point, because, he did show an interest in the bikeway. He does show an interest in ways, I'll put it greenways and bikeways. Those are the three. And that's not to say to everybody else who applied. I think it might be good if we have alternates. So if somebody's missing, we could have something. The ordinance says that person gets to vote if a regular person is missing.
And just to say, George Daniel lives up on Renard, and I think he is the lone wolf of Fox Meadow. And so I really support representation, because one of the pieces of the Greenway that we're talking about would go to elementary school number 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to have representation from that area.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm hearing a broad number of people say Daniel, a number of people say Duke Castle, Kirshner, Benedict. Is there one more out of the list that maybe is outstanding? And
the thing that attracted me about Wagner was her professional background. It's transportation, not specifically greenways, but clearly greenways becomes an element in transportation. I think. That would be an important.
Would somebody like to make a motion for Duke Castle, Kirshner, Benedict, Daniel, and Wagner, and the other three?
So moved.
Being, the other three being alternates, basically?
Yeah, all moved.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we appoint Ducastle, Kirshner, Benedict, Daniel, and Wagner, and that we appoint as alternates Sherman, Neese, and Flynn.
Good.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
What does an alternate mean? I mean, there's no provision in the ordinance for an alternate.
I guess we'll need to amend, I guess.
Well, we need to get some direction. Do you mean?
Well, I'll tell you what I thought in my mind, and then the board can say what they think. If somebody can't come and there's a discussion and there needs to be a vote, then that person can be counted for the quorum and they'd be allowed to vote, if that makes any sense. Unless we need to have something formal that the person who's not going to be there sends an email or something.
And otherwise they can attend but not vote.
Right.
Okay, so if anybody's not there who is a regular member, then an alternate can sit instead and vote in the...
That would be my thing.
The alternates can always come and contribute. They just can't vote unless there's a regular seated member. Okay.
So we're not changing the number of members that in the ordinance, just adding a provision about providing for...
Yes.
How many alternates are there? I'm sorry.
Three.
I think I identified them as Sherman, Neese, and
I mean, just the numbers.
Three.
Okay. Well, if in a moment I could probably, while you all go on to other business, we could probably just draft that up in the ordinance here somewhere and...
Okay. Let it...
And to see both Jackie and myself.
We really should pass attachment A as a whole with you and Jackie inserted into it.
So moved.
Second.
All right. And then the five names for at-large members that I read earlier, I assume are part of that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
It'll be fun.
And just for clarification, it's perhaps assumed that if we have two members, regular members who don't show up and three alternates who do, then the chair would select.
We ask the chair to let us know about that.
Yeah.
Chair could then select for that meeting whoever gets to vote.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Sheesh.
Ready for me?
Yeah, item D3, Mr. Manager, do you have any introduction to this?
No, this is just a status report on the long-range transit plan that Alderman Coleman had asked be placed on the agenda, since he's been a committee member since the inception of the planning process, and wanted to give you all in the community an update.
Okay. Drew, can you help me? I've never...
You can click or roll or hit enter
How do I back up? Or this is the first slide?
That's the first slide.
Okay. Well, before I talk about the first slide, I just want to give you all as background, you know, why I'm doing this now, where we've been. So the committee has been meeting, the Long Range Transit Study Committee, to which Alex and I were appointed, has been meeting for about a year, and with our consultant, an organization called Trans Systems, since last winter. There's also, that's called the Policy Committee, and there's also a Technical Committee, which is staff people who meet with the consultant, and Trish and Adina have been serving on that. And each month there's a technical committee meeting on a Wednesday and the policy committee on a Thursday, and we've been moving this along. And at our last meeting a couple weeks ago in September, we made some decisions about the direction of the study in terms of specific corridors we're going to be looking at, and I thought that was a good juncture to kind of bring you all up to date and into the discussion. So basically what the consultant is looking at is two types, and the long range transit study is not looking at our like regular route structure. It's looking at new system enhancements that's going to really boost up the performance of the system. And there's two concepts, the concept of the high investment corridor and the concept of an enhanced express bus. And that's what this first slide is. And basically, I'm not going to read it to you, but you know, we have a little overlap in terms of BRT as bus rapid transit that can be either on a separate busway or in an exclusive lane in an arterial street. And then we have streetcar and light rail also as high investment.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Go back to the first slide. I know.
Okay. How do I go back?
Sorry about that. I should have said, don't click it.
Okay.
With all of these choices that are on this slide mm-hmm. are under the high investment corridor, is that correct?
Well, or the high investment overlap, there's an overlap of two of the,
except for
the bus rapid transit.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And then the express bus is only express bus.
And is that within, just within the service area of Chapel Hill Transit, or has there been discussion about connecting with the other parts of the system?
Yeah, there's discussion, but the scope of the study is within Chapel Hill Transit, and there are simultaneous discussions going on. There's this group called STAC, which is the... Trish, or Adina, do you remember what STAC stands
Special
for?
Special Transportation Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Mark. Which we appointed James Carnahan and Heidi Perry
okay.
to, and that's the two MPOs, and also TTA
okay.
is updating planning, and I'll have a little more to say about some of that in a minute. But
okay.
this study is specifically the Chapel Hill transit system and long-range improvements looking over the next 30 years.
Okay.
So these are the operational and cost assumptions for those five technologies. And this is looking at a third of a mile stop spacing. And the key factors to look at here are the fourth row, which is the vehicle cost, well, the bottom three rows, really, which is where the costs come in. And there's a huge disjuncture between anything on a fixed rail, whether a light rail or a streetcar, and anything using bus. And you look at the you know, the capital cost, where you go from $40 million a mile down to $9 million or even $500,000 in some of the other choices. That's big money for this community. And as the discussions proceeded, basically we came to the conclusion that any kind of rail that was going to serve the Chapel Hill transit system would arrive as part of a regional rail project, that we don't have the financial capacity within Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and UNC to put up the kinds of dollars that are suggested for either light rail or streetcar system. At the same time, it was agreed that any planning we do now needs to leave the door open for that to come in the future, because we know that those cost factors are going to change in the future, you know, as gas prices increase and other factors affect transportation priorities.
Before you change that,
yeah.
let me just ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
When y'all were discussing that, was there a discussion about the amount of population growth that would sustain each option?
Yes, and these everything in the study is based on the 2035 transportation plan data and also extrapolations from the TDM, the transit demand model, the regional demand model for transit that they're extrapolating from. So they're looking at the existing planning documents and studies, you know, that go through the time frame of this, and all of this is cognizant on that. And when we get to the next slide, we'll look at how some of those numbers come into play in terms of projected trips.
Dan?
Yeah.
Do you look also at, just the basic cost-benefit analysis? I know it's expensive, but what are the benefits? You pay what you get.
Right.
You get what you pay for, right?
Yeah, and we'll get to that shortly. The benefits come in when you look at the cost per rider, right? and that's coming up. And but these kinds of numbers, the spread that we see here, tends to translate into that figure as well, because your cost per mile, you're serving a similar number of passengers over that route.
John? I just have one other question, sort of a follow-up with him. In terms of the express bus, you're talking about a size bus now, a regular size bus, and were there any discussions about smaller vans, sort of, I guess, my best description of that would be maybe a feeder van or something?
And well, not in terms of this particular aspect of the system. That would come into the other kinds of, like, local bus service within Chapel Hill Transit.
Okay.
So, you know, that's presumed that, you know, all of this, it relates to feeder systems that serve the express bus or that would serve the bus rapid transit.
But those costs aren't contained in there. Are they contained?
That's right. No, they're not.
Okay.
Mark, were you going to say
something?
Okay.
Go ahead.
I went the wrong way, so now.
Right click.
Okay, there we go. So this is just by way of background. I think everyone's familiar with these concepts, but basically they look at these three market segments, which is the feeder market, the walk market, and the park and ride market, in terms of how they examine each potential route. And the walk market is considered most important, that the people who are going to walk to a bus stop and get on and are like, that's kind of the heart of any route. And but then we also look at the feeder market and the park and ride market as well. So this is just one example of how they drew that I want to include just for background.
But they did that type of analysis on a number of different corridors?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And did that analysis also take into account an addition of park and ride places or just the existing park and ride sites that
are present? Looking ahead over that 30-year period, what are the opportunities for park and ride that will increase the ridership in the bus system? Because the goal of the study is to optimize the use of the transit system during the period of the study.
Okay.
So this, I hope you all had a chance to look at in the packet, because it's a lot to take in all at once. But basically, this was all the routes they looked at, where they looked at what the projected park and ride, the projected walk market, and the projected feeder market, and come up with a total estimated ridership in 2035. And so these numbers, again, which get correlated to the cost figures, begin to weigh the advantages of one route versus the other. And you can see there are some big discrepancies in terms of routes they looked at. Like, they looked at this route at the bottom, number 9. They had the idea that, you know, should there be a park and ride near, or like around Calvander, that would take people down Homestead to Carolina North. And you can see that's projected by far would be the lowest ridership of any of these routes.
And is that assumption with the existing population that lives out there, or with what?
It's based on growth projections, based on current zoning. So clearly what we're going to do with our current update to the plan would increase that sum. You know, it's not going to get it from 45,000 to, you know, this six-figure range, unless the NASA PERC has something up their sleeve I haven't heard about yet. But, you know, so we'd see some change there. But, you know, as we look at, you know, more density in certain areas.
Dan, the 5B, which is the east-west rail, I made the assumption that that's the rail parallel, perpendicular to Martin Luther King. Is that correct?
No, that's actually 5A, the north-south rail, parallel to MLK.
Okay.
So that's our rail line, as we think of it, is the 5A.
So
which
is the east? Yeah.
5B, there's actually a rail line, or I guess a projected rail line, going east out of Chapel Hill, parallel to 54. And let me go ahead and get to the next slide, which is the routes that have actually been selected, and we can come back to this if need be. So this is where we got to in terms of the decisions that were made on road routing. And there's basically two components of the study. That there's the what's called the lower cost investment and the high investment. And the high investment is anything that's a fixed route, a fixed guideway. And so the high investment includes two components, which are, if you see the dotted line going from number 3 on the right up on 15501, that is, there's nothing there now. That's a right-of-way that doesn't exist. It's, you know, it's been in the plans and then comes down to intersect with the number 4 gateway. Those are called those circles on 54 and then come up to campus. Then that could continue up along the dotted line that's harder to see on the left side where the railroad track coming out of the coal plant is. And we're studying both the possibility of a bus rapid transit line parallel and basically an adjacent right-of-way to the railroad line, but also in a dedicated lane on Martin Luther King Boulevard. So both those options will be in the study for the high investment systems. Joel.
With regards to what's next to the railroad now, have there been any discussions or talks or just information exchanged with Norfolk Southern, I think? Aren't they the people that own? I'm not really sure which railroad owns it, so.
Southern Railroad.
Yeah. Okay. Have there been any discussions with them about?
About using their right-of-way?
Mm-hmm.
No, there have not. But one of the reasons we selected Trans Systems is because among the proposals that were received, they appear to have the strongest background in working with railroads, with like freight railroads in particular, in other areas, and that we felt that they would be able to help us with this. And they actually brought in one of their principals at this last meeting, who was a very strong advocate for rail and helped keep this that line in the study, which despite you saw where the ridership projection was relatively fairly low, but he really is a real believer in rail as part of an overall system that has benefits.
No, I'm not opposed to that. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that at some point, I think even with this study, given what we've seen about the North Carolina Railroad, which we taxpayers own, and the discussion about right-of-ways, that there needs to be sort of a hint or a heads up that, this is what we're looking at. However you do it with the consultant or the three entities that are Chapel Hill Transit, and that's just...
Those ideas are on the table, particularly because... Bill Strom, who's on the committee, Town Council Member Strom, serves on the TTA board, and so he's very aware of all the problems TTA has had working with North Carolina Railroad. And, he's very quick to bring those up and remind everyone of that. So, that awareness is there.
Okay.
So, so all that's understood in terms of the potential obstacles.
Okay.
And also... those as part of the cost equation, and I think we'll hear more from the consultant on that. So the other parts of this are the express bus service, which are each one of those nodes is the origination of an express bus line. Starting at number 1, it's coming in from on MLK Boulevard near I-40, and moving east to number 3 is coming in down Franklin Street. And there's actually two potential routes there, one down Fordham Boulevard, one down Franklin Street, and one on Franklin Street would also have a
part of the route. There would be a bus that went directly to Carolina North. Number 4 comes down 54 and probably up Manning Drive, although there's some discussion about Manning Drive versus Raleigh Road as how to get into campus. Number 6 is up 15501 from southern Chapel Hill and Chatham County. Then with 7 and 8, we get into what's of concern to us directly here in Carrboro, 7 being an express route that starts up near McDougall School and would come down roughly along the lines of the F route and go into the campus area. 8 being a route that would originate near Carrboro Plaza and go down 54 to serve the dense development there, and then cut up Greensboro Street. And this was something before the last meeting of the Transit Committee, I met with Steve and a couple of the planning staff members to talk about several things, including what's the best way to get, we want to make sure that people in Carrboro have a direct route to Carolina North, that they don't have to go to Chapel Hill, downtown Chapel Hill, and transfer there. And given the congestion and the turning issues around the Main and Weaver and Greensboro intersections, it was felt that this route coming on 54 and then going up Greensboro, South Greensboro Street up to Estes would, in terms of an express service, be the best route, and then would provide a transfer point right in downtown Carrboro for other routes, local routes coming from other parts of Carrboro that then want to switch to go to Carolina North.
So you pick up the bus downtown and then you go to Carolina North?
Exactly, unless you're already on that Route 8. So those are the routes, and this is what is moving forward in the study then, in terms of the consultants will then be modeling these routes and, you know, figuring out, you know, what kind of performance we could actually see over time. So here's where we get into the cost of the technologies. And I maybe should have shown this slide before the last one in sequence. But basically, we have the column here that shows the cost per rider and the capital costs for these various different routes. And this is all based on the lowest cost technology, which is not in all cases what we're looking at. But it's pretty close to it because we're looking at the BRT solutions and the express bus solutions. We're not looking at the higher cost, which would generally be the streetcar or the light rail. And you can see the range of costs is, you know, there's certainly on a percentage basis, you know, there's factors of, you know, 150% in that cost per rider, but on the actual dollar, you know, they're within a fairly close range. So, you know, we didn't feel like any of the costs in themselves were at this point a deciding factor in eliminating any of the routes. And, you know, and so, for example, the Homestead Road route is not in the study, despite the fact that it's the cheapest, but it's cheapest because it has such very low ridership potentially. So there are certain economies of scale you get in some of the larger routes, and also depending on what the route is.
When you say the low ridership leads to a low cost, is that because it would be, and I realize we're nowhere near talking about the scheduling of these things, but right, it would be once an hour service instead of twice an hour service?
No, we're looking at that same 3 trips an hour in all cases. That's like the benchmark. But actually, in the case of the Homestead Road, I believe the reason the cost is low is because it's a very short route.
It's
from Calvander over to Carolina North. Right. So that's a short route, as opposed to if you look at that 5B east-west rail line route, which is the one that started, you know, way up at 15501 and then came down and came up. That's a very long route, so that increases the cost. Similarly, with the route coming down from 15501 up near the Durham County line.
Mm-hmm. Well, then why is the Hillsborough Road in Estes on the higher end, 3.4? It's a 7B.
Okay, because what you're looking at is coming in Hillsborough Road from McDougall, then going up Greensboro and over Estes. Mm-hmm. So that's also a, you know, it's not as long a route.
So it's the mileage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the capital costs have to do with the, you know, the number of vehicles that are presumed to be needed to serve each route.
Gotcha.
Primarily.
And so the plan or how y'all are proceeding is to keep all of those on the table for now.
Well, not all these, actually. I have to go back to this one, that what's not there on this. So, you know, we chose the 8B by South Greensboro, even though it's more expensive, because we feel like that's a better route for Carver in terms of getting from Carver to
the original
Caroline and Norm.
The original 8B was more aligned along Main Street and North Greensboro Street instead of the bypass in South Greensboro.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And the feeling when I met with staff was that in terms of thinking of something as an express bus, that navigating downtown in that manner would tend to slow
down.
Would
not be very express.
Yeah. This actually was, for some reason, the 5A rail line was not included in the slide, but that is in the study. And I guess six is down there. So, yeah, so the others of these are all in it, except for nine. Nine is also. So nine is not in it, and the original 8B is not in it, and 5A is added from this chart. And these are charts that I pulled out of the consultant's presentation, so I haven't modified these at all.
And just so I understand the concept, I mean, so, you know, if, for example, 9 is not included, that doesn't mean there wouldn't be service on Hempstead Road. It's just that it would be more traditional bus service.
Right, it would be traditional service like
and
what we have
likewise,
now.
Likewise, Main Street and Carrboro.
Right,
be,
yeah,
would
we would see the service on Main Street. Okay. We'd see the service up Jones Ferry Road. It was just that those would not be express bus services.
Right, okay.
In terms of how we're looking at it. And let me ask Trish and Adina, do either of you have anything to add in terms of, not to put you on the spot, but anything important that I've overlooked or misrepresented? Or, no? Okay.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah, please.
My mind is thinking about, so the assumption is that this is to move people around who, and I know this sounds crazy, who either live or work just in Southern Orange County. And I guess the question about that I'm asking is because when you think about and separate sort of the TTA express bus, I guess my question is for those people that are coming in, for example, the demographics show us that there are an X amount of cars that are coming from Durham to Chapel Hill and X amount of cars going from Chapel Hill to Durham. What sort of assumptions are made about that to sort of get that all together?
Well, those are the assumptions that are in the 2035 transportation plan.
Right.
So it's those numbers that, you know, we've already been involved in the planning process of that through the MPO.
Okay.
And so that's what they're using for that. By the way, David Bond told us that, I'm forgetting which group's discussions these were. I guess it's the TTA, Renew TTA discussions. Mm-hmm. But when they're talking about how things are stacking up in terms of looking for where it makes sense for a TTA to start, it's actually the Durham to Chapel Hill route that is looking strongest in terms of all the kinds of factors that they consider. You know?
And it should. I mean, you know, if you look at what's going on, that absence, you see, for, and I use this example, the Robinson school buses, everybody's seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They come in 1 hour, depending upon, you know, if you stand, I mean, I'm not just standing out on 15501 for 8 hours, just counting them. But, I mean, you see them fairly regularly, and I think that in terms of the discussions about this plan and any other plan, there needs to be a recognition that that is absent from what we need to do, and we need to move more to that, because people, I mean, you work in Durham. I used to work in Durham. It would have been great if we could take a bus. Express. Or RTP.
Right. And at some point, you know, those planning efforts will begin to intersect. But, you know, right now, you know, we're really actually farther along, I believe, than any of the regional efforts, which are just getting underway. And, of course, you know, we're accustomed to working together and having the system that we're
There's no criticism of that. I'm just saying that this should also, they'll have a certain amount of, if you're going to take an express bus, say, from Homestead or even from anywhere in Carver, there ought to be some recognition in this, in our long-term planning for 2035, that one day one of our children may decide to live here but work in Durham, and so you ought to be able to take the express bus downtown and then take an express bus to Durham. I think it makes
absolutely.
I'd hope I could.
So where will this head next? This study.
Well, the plan is that the consultant is, they're going to model these routes, and then they're going to determine what the cost, sort of a cost-benefit analysis of, you know, what the ridership we can expect, what the costs are going to be, and then they're going to put into that a sense of what the financing options are. In other words, how can we pay for these different routes over time? And so based on that information, we'll then be able to make some decisions on, okay, is there one of these routes? Go back to the...
I think the UMC needs to be more.
This one. Yeah, so, you know, is there one of these routes that it makes sense to start looking at implementing in, say, the next 5 years, and to look at in terms of part of the transit system, capital planning, to be developing the capacity for, say, one of these express bus lines, or, you know, do we need to start acquiring right-of-way for one of these bus rapid transit solutions? And so we would have a time frame for doing that, and then also a sense of what funding sources we would use to pay for them.
We were just sitting here thinking, gosh, 2035, I'll be 80, and the ladies to other sides of me will be a little bit more or a little bit less. I may not be able to drive to board meetings then.
Although she will be on the board.
No, I will. Probably be on the board.
I will not be.
Yeah, you say that every election. You said that. So, God, that's probably true. You know. Anyway, in talking, you know, our population is aging, and many of us probably, you know, won't leave here voluntarily. So in making these predictions and making these plans, was there conversation about the fact that it will be an aging population and the different transportation needs that entails?
Well, that's a discussion that would have happened in the long-range transportation plan, the 2035 plan, through the NPO. And I don't recall offhand that process. I don't know if Adina or Trish, can you comment on that? Are those considerations of, like, you know, changing population demographics and how that affects mobility? And
we need to. Affect?
Do you want to come up?
I could ride my scooter here.
borrow Dan's scooter.
I think that the projections that Alderman Coleman is talking about is the triangle regional model that we, all of the different participants, have given data to, so that when they run this model, and that's what they'll be running when they input the different routes that they've selected, as he's shown you. And I think that there's probably some implicit consideration of an aging population, you know, when you're giving that data into the model. That's where I think those considerations have to be taken into account. The model itself, I don't think, accounts for an explicit aging population. But that doesn't mean that it can't be taken into consideration in other ways. This is just sort of where the inputs into that will get you the numbers that will show certain levels of ridership, which should be projected in the data that we put into the model. Does that? So, and we can go back and take a look at how we input that data.
Yeah.
And bring that up to the modelers and see how that's
I'd like us to, because we really are an aging population in the triangle, not just me. There are other people getting old, too.
Any other questions?
I had a question about, I think it's on, I don't know, it's on my page B4. And if the feeder market, let's just look at
3B. Is that a diagram? Is that what
no, the no, estimated market size.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you look at B4, is it B4? B3, 15501 Fordham Estes Drive,
uh-huh.
And the feeder market is 117,100. You know, those the numbers that are dependent, I guess, on UNC student ridership are the largest.
Yeah,
right?
This is more UNC employee ridership.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. And so, how was that determined? I mean, how did they distinguish between student ridership and?
Well, they don't.
Okay.
But you know, the bulk of the ridership on, you know, on that route in particular would be employee rents rather than students, because it's not a whole lot of student-oriented housing in that direction. You know, if you go up Route 1, the top one, you know, you're looking at, and that's not going to be reflecting the feeder market, more so in the walk market. You know, you've got a huge walk market of all those apartment complexes going up Airport Road. So that's, you know, that's a student factor there.
And UNC will be paying into this. When we look at these dollar figures, is that's assuming UNC is a partner in this?
Yeah, we're assuming that our current partnership will persist for another 30 years under our existing terms, and you know, we'll all be getting along happily.
And increase proportionally?
And what?
And increase proportionally?
Yes.
Well, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that a lot of, as far as the capital costs are concerned, at least at the present time, a large percentage of the capital costs come from our federal tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We still need to have to figure out how to spend them wisely. But you know, when you see a figure like $100 million, we're not talking about those are not, I think it's some 90% or something like that federal dollars. But
that's right. And
depending on who you vote for next fall.
And that kind of thing. Yeah, and the kind of work we're doing with this project puts us in a better position to obtain those dollars as well, because the whole system becomes more robust and has a higher level of ridership.
I guess I have one last question, and you may really have addressed this, but I just want to be clear about this. If you go forward a page, maybe. One more. And so these, whatever it is, 8 or 9 different gateway services or alternatives or routes that you're looking at in the study, so half of those are the lowest cost per rider technology is listed there as the express bus. The other half, it's basically the bus rapid transit. Is the thought to, conclude from this process that we're going to pursue one primary technology? I mean, that we're going to wind up with a bus rapid transit system with various feeder services?
versus the other alternative is express bus with feeder services?
Okay, well, let me go back. Because we're looking at bus rapid transit along the 5A, which is the dotted line coming in from the green circle south.
Yes.
Route 1 on MLK, and 5B, which is the dotted line, which is the other rail, which is the existing railroad line.
Right.
So that's where we're looking at bus rapid transit.
Well, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is it possible that one of the conclusions is that we should have a mix of, over some areas, express bus service and other areas, bus rapid transit?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
And, you know, and certainly, any of those 3 BRT routes, you know, there's potentially the opportunity to provide a much higher level of performance to the users of the system in terms of the speed because, let me go back again to this one. To this point where you see the signalized intersections, and so the BRT busway shows only one as composed of the BRT arterial shows two, and the express bus shows 3. So, and that translates, even with signal preemption on the buses, it still translates into a improvement in the speed at which people will get to their destination.
And when you talk about signal preemption, the idea is the traffic signal detects that the bus is coming and changes to favor the direction that the bus is trying to go or that type of thing?
That's right.
Right. Okay. Just want to make sure I understand it.
Well, can we do that now?
We can.
We can potentially.
Well, soon, yeah. I mean, basically the upgrade to the signal system will allow that type of thing, and that should happen in the next 2 to 20 years.
Yes.
Safe answer.
If you're all gone, I'll handle it. Yeah.
Jackie's going to see it through.
I'll see it through.
Okay. Dan, thank you for this report.
Yeah, thank you all. Good conversation.
All right. Well,
thank you, Dan.
Okay. Are there any matters from staff?
Just the one from the town attorney.
Okay.
Cool. Yes.
I can deal with it later.
Cool session to deal with matters of attorney-client privilege.
Okay.
Move to the closed session.
For an attorney-client. Second.
All right. Been moved and seconded that we go into closed session to discuss a matter involving attorney-client privilege. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. If all of y'all will excuse us for a few minutes.